KO4 NUE, W4 DJW.
W4 DJW, KO4 NUE. Go ahead, Dave.
How you doing? How's the chigger bites?
They're doing all right, I guess. They about healed up. We had a cookout today and got tagged on the head, back of the head, with two red wasps. So it just seems like every time we get together for something, I get some kind of insect something.
Well, I'm glad to hear the chigger bites are gone. Mine are about gone, too, just about all the way. No longer itching or anything. But that's a two-week ordeal because today is 2 weeks.
And down at my left ankle at the sock line, that it's my feet have always been slower to heal. And it's still scabbed up a little bit. But other than that, what's going on with you today?
Well, I made a pretty good discovery today. So I was hunting through code for a place to catch a signal arrival. And I decided, you know, it just hits me. Sometimes I just think of things, you know, a little late. I wonder if anybody else has ever done what I'm doing right now. And lo and behold, somebody has. So instead of reinventing the wheel, I'm going out there and looking at the stuff that they got. It's called Dump 1090, but it's for ADS-B for drones. Well, drones, you know, a loose definition of multi-rotors, airplanes, full-scale, and radio control. So I'm just reading over it. It looks pretty interesting. It's somebody else has already done all the coding, and they made it open source. How about that?
Okay. Well, that's very encouraging. I need some encouragement right about now.
How's the Arduino coming? You still working on that?
I am kind of struggling with if statements right now. If this, then that, or if that, then this. And there's so many things you can do with that I'm kind of struggling with it a little bit. That and float. Float's really messing with me. I think I've got the if statements beginning to understand how that works, but the float is the float's getting me.
Well, the did you finish? It sounded like it cut off while you were talking. Okay, so those ifs are called conditional expressions. And there's a lot of them. There's if, then, else, while, do, for. There's tons of them. And they're just logical expressions. So, or conditional expressions. One of the things that helps if you get a whole lot of them is to create a flowchart. And you go into the flowchart and you say, if this, then, and you go down that leg. And then on the else, you go down the other leg. And then you can have three or four else's, and then you can have a final, right? If none of that, then that's your last one. That's the thing you're going to do. So for complex conditional expressions, it sometimes pays to build a little flowchart. Flowcharts have symbols. Like a rectangle is, you know, a statement that's going to happen, whereas a diamond is the condition. And the diamond's got points coming off of it. One can be yes, one can be no, and the other one can be, you know, null. And null is not the same as no. But anyway, I don't know if that helps or not, but that helps me sometimes when it gets really complicated. And then the float is just it's a numeric value that has a decimal part. You either have integers for numbers or you have floating point numbers. Floating point numbers have decimal fractional parts, and integers don't.
It's not the float. I understand the float. What I mean by that, I mean, I know when float is used, or I think I do. What's getting me is when I want to do a float for a voltage value. The voltage value is not 0 to 12. It's 0 to, I think it's 1024 or 1052, something like that. And I have to tell it, okay, you know, 3.1 volts equals 566, or, you know, 566.1 or something like that. It's that portion of it that I'm struggling with, and I'm glad you brought that up because I got a question after you come back.
So that's really, I can make that really simple for you because I run into that all the time. I know exactly what you're talking about. And you cross multiply. And what that means is you'll say 0 is to 12 as 0 is to 1024. And what you do is you write a 0 over a 12, and right next to it, to the right of that, you write another 0 over a 1024. And you cross multiply. You say the upper 0 time, or a number, right, a value, 1 is to 12 as question mark is to 1024. So you'll do a cross multiply. You go to the upper right corner and say that number times the lower left corner equals, and you take the answer there and divide it by the lower right corner of the other side. And it gives you the answer where the question mark is. It's cross multiplication. Simplest way to solve that. And to visualize it, you can just open a spreadsheet and put the two relational parts inside two separate columns side by side. Like 1 over 12 is question mark over 1024. And then you go 1 times 1024 divided by 12 equals question mark. It's that simple. I can help you with that if that's hard to describe over there, but it's really that simple.
Okay. That makes things a lot easier. I honestly did not think about that. But here's my next question, and I think I know the answer to this. Is as long as I am dealing with voltages that are under 5 volts, you know, not having an issue with routing, you know, if this, then turn pin, you know, pin A1 higher, or if it's a digital pin, then let's see. Digital is high, and I forget what analog is. How do I deal with voltages that are higher than 12 volts through the Arduino? Am I going to have to build a resistor and current reduction thing, circuit, or can I use a shift register for that, or what?
That's not too difficult either. You use resistors. And what you do is you put two resistors in parallel and one in series. And I'll have to draw that out for you because explaining that over there is going to be hard. But it's called a voltage divider. So when you exceed the maximum capacity of one of the components in your circuit, right, you can't, it's going up to 12 and that's max, and you've got something over here that needs 24 or that supplies 24 and you want to measure that, the 24, then you'll put that 24 in through a voltage divider, and you can use resistors. You put two resistors on one side and one resistor on the other side, and you get half the current or half, not the current, half the voltage come as your output. And now you can feed that into your, you know, component that maxes out at 12, and it's got a range of 0 to 12 when that 24 comes in, and if it comes out at 6, then you know that 24 is really 12. If it comes out at 9, right, then it's really 18, right? So resistors are your friend. They can break that down. I have a little chip that has 8 digital to analog pins on it, and it's got a really low voltage, like 3 volts. But I want to measure each one of the cells inside a lithium polymer battery, which can go up to 4.2 volts. And if I put that 4.2 volts on that pin, that chip is gone. I think it's a 3390 chip or something like that. So I have to use voltage dividers. I just put them through diode, or not diodes, but resistors. And it can be low wattage resistors, little tiny resistors, because you're not putting any current across it. You're just measuring the voltage that's there. Does that make sense?
Yes, I got it. That makes perfect sense. I just, like I said, I'm still messing with it. And I am kind of, how do I word this? So here's what I've learned. This is not going to sound strange to you, but it's strange in my mind right now, is that I'm finding myself asking, you know, when starting to write something is, okay, what do I want to do? And when I decide that, then I'll have to, you know, pick my pens. When I get into the pen modes, it is, okay, well, now I want it to go high. And then I have to think, okay, well, once it goes high, what do I want it to do? And then it's delay, or it's go low, or, I mean, it's a new language, but the steps are, they seem to be simple. It's the language that, you know, I'm having to learn, and that's with anything, but I guess that's logic, but it is step by step. It's kind of stupid or super simple, but it's a language you got to overcome.
So you're running into something every developer runs into, and what they've done for that is there's an expression called pseudocode. And what it is you write out, you don't write the code for it. Forget about the code. Forget about the language you're going to implement in. In your source code compiler, that window that they give you with an Arduino, whatever the comment character is, I think it's a pound sign, or it might, you know, the tic-tac-toe board, or it might be two forward slashes. I can't remember. It's been a long time since I've played with an Arduino. But whatever it is, you write your code out in human-readable language. The first thing I'm going to do, you type it up, put the pound sign in there, or whatever that thing is that makes a comment, and say, the first thing I'm going to do is this. And once I'm going to, and then you write another one out, and you say, when I have that value, then I'm going to do this. And you type that out, and you put a whole bunch of comments in your source code. And then you might go back and look at it and say, you know what? I can't do that before I do this. I'm going to have to cut this one out and move it up above that one. And you do, and you reorder them until your pseudocode is explaining in human language exactly how you're going to accomplish the task. And then you go under each one of those lines in the pseudocode, and you fulfill that task. That's just a simple task, and you just write out the code that it takes to make that happen. And you don't have to be thinking about what's going to happen 3 steps from now or 10 steps from now. You did that when you wrote it out in the pseudocode, and that's a best practice that most programmers follow. Create a blank source code file, put comments in there, and write your pseudocode out before you write the first line of code.
Right, so in Arduino, that would be a forward slash, and the ID does not, it does not recognize that as part of the code, but it is a way for me to basically put my thoughts in the stream, so that I don't get lost and I can keep track of what I want to do, and how to do it without messing with the code. I'm pretty sure that's what you're saying, right?
That's right. And write it all out, all commented, right? So it's not going to execute a single line of code. But it's all in comments. And this is inside procedural languages. So you start with procedural because that's a lot easier than OO, which is object-oriented. That's totally different than this, right? But in a procedural language, this is how you do this. Write them all out. Then take a step back and look at it. and go through it in your head. And if it's not right, rearrange it. And then when you get it right and you think it's all good, leave all that in there and just go start filling in between those comments. Actually do what that comment said you were going to do. And by the time you get to the end, you'll have your program written.
I want to ask you this and see if this is doable. I understand it's way on down the road for me. But so here's my end state, is that I want to be able to input, I want the Arduino to measure whatever I want to measure, whether it's humidity, whether it's voltage, you know, this circuit's open or this circuit is closed. And I would like to be able to put that in some type of packet. And transmit that with APRS. Is that, I'm thinking that's going to be possible, but I've got a ways to go to do that, but that is doable, right?
That's doable, but it may be a whole lot. I don't know. I didn't get that deep into Arduinos, what they can do. I think Bob is writing to a SD card using Arduino, so I think you can do that, but I have never done it. For me, it's a whole lot easier to use a full-blown computer, which is a Raspberry Pi. And, I mean, if you're going to get that deep into it, you can write any, you can do anything you want on the Raspberry Pi. Like, that's not a problem. All right, you can write log messages out. The Raspberry Pi even has the capability to become itself a transmitter. Now, it's very, very low wattage transmitter, right? It'll probably make it across the room, right? But if you've got inside your room a digipeater, then the Raspberry Pi itself is able to build a packet that is an AFSK packet, right? Which is the language, the AX25 language that underlies APRS. It can take text that you put online, and it can turn it into audio, an audio file, that text. And then you can play that audio file, and you can pipe the output of it into the GPIO pin on the Raspberry Pi, which is an antenna that resonates when you send that through the AFSK program. It takes the text, turns it into AFSK, transmits it out of a GPIO pin that is very, very low wattage, you know, it's just within the domain of your car or your house or wherever you are. Your digipeater in the same room can pick that up and send it on up to the mountain. So you could do it. That's a really easy way to get packets on the air. There's other ways you can do that. You can use an Arduino, I'm sure. You can use it on Arduino, and you can get it out to a radio that will transmit it somehow, but it's going to be a lot more complicated than that. W4DJW.
KL4NUE. Roger that. Well, you know, I've got a ways to go. I'm pretty slow right now, but, you know, when I get comfortable, I'm not moving on to something else until I get comfortable with what I've got. And so far I'm kind of impressed with myself, but you know, most men are. But I've been able to build a circuit that measures, you know, all on a breadboard, of course, but it measures my pin voltage with, you know, a potentiometer. And if voltage drops below this, then, you know, I can write a statement on the serial monitor that says, you know, hey, warning, voltage low, and it lights a LED when it gets below, you know, my voltage. And that's where the if statements are coming in for me right now, is, you know, if it's above this, then I want you to, you know, do this with pin 5 and turn it high. And that's kind of neat, you know. I know that's pretty simple stuff, but I do a lot of stuff with solar, so if you think about the potential there, you'd be able to monitor a grid or whatever from a distance through a packet. That's got some potential there, or for me.
W4DJWA, you're preaching to the choir. I saw that same potential when I was in mechanical engineering classes at Greenville Tech, and they forced me to take a computer science class. And I said, whoa, this has some potential. And I went and changed my major from mechanical engineering to computer science. So, yeah, I get that. I understand exactly what you're saying.
Yeah, well, one thing else that's I'm starting to see is that, when you got a machine shop, especially with all these antennas and brackets and, everything that goes along with a radio, that kind of, whatever. If you can get a little bit of electrical something going on and to marry up with that, then, boy, it makes an interesting hobby. But, boy, it sure is a whole lot cheaper, too.
And oftentimes more reliable because you're doing it. You're doing it for yourself under the circumstances that you need it for versus like somebody who's selling that as a service. They don't know your particulars, right? So they're getting something close, and oftentimes we settle for that. But when you can do it yourself, you can get exactly what you want. The more time you put into it, the better it gets.
I've learned that lesson years ago. Retired from the military, I opened a garage down there at the shop, and I had a handicapped man brought his car to me, this old Volkswagen. It was a blown head gasket. It was handicapped. Now, it was the only vehicle the man had, and I sent the head off to Florida to have it machined. And they sent it back. I paid, extra to have it done ASAP. Nobody around here would touch it. So I put it back on the car. It took me 14 hours to get it on the car. And 2 days later, the lifter dropped out of it. They've got funny lifters in them. And, the people in Florida that did the machine work, they didn't have to look him in the eye. And, explain to somebody who don't have a vehicle. He was nice about it, but you just can't tell people that. You gotta try to take care of them best you can, especially if they trust you with something. And I swore right then, I will never do this again, ever again. I'm going to be responsible. If something goes wrong, I've got nobody to blame but me. And that way, and you would be surprised at how much that makes you learn. When you're the one responsible, you'll learn real quick.
W4DJW, or you pay for it twice, and then on the second go around, that's when you learn real quick. One way or another, you're going to get it.
So I got on eBay, and it's a funny story. You got to hear this. So I got on eBay and found a Winona Van Norman seat and guide machine. And what it does is it does head work for, any kind of engine you could ever want to do. It's an older machine, but it works really well. Found it in Florida, Georgia, right on the Georgia-Florida line. Won the bid on eBay, drove all the way down there to get it, and I had to drive into Florida to get to his driveway. Let me let my radio drop. I was in the middle of about 8,000 acres at the border of Florida and Georgia. It's a sand driveway. The gate, when I pulled up on the gate was had vines all over it. No traffic in and out of the driveway. And when I get to, you know, he met me there and cut the vines out and let me in the driveway. And we drove and drove and drove and finally got to his place. But he was had an airfield out there. And he built helicopter engines for the type of helicopters that's like on MASH, you know, the 4077th MASH show. I don't know what kind of helicopter that is, but he had 10 or 15 of them out there, and that's what he built. He was certified to work on those kind of engines. He tried to use it for that, but he said, the machine just will not hold the kind of tolerances that the FAA requires me to hold with it. And, you know, I'm doing automotive work with it, so I've got to hold down to, you know, a couple of thousands. But he's, you know, FAA, they require you to, you know, you got to be down to 10,000ths or sometimes billionths, depending on what it is. But, and he had cargo carriers on either side of his helicopter, and he would fly, he would build these engines, these two-piece magnesium engines, and $15,000 a piece. He'd build them, put seven or eight of them on his cargo carriers on the little helicopter he had, and he'd fly them into town and pick up his supplies and fly back. And boy, you just think about that for a minute. I mean, that's crazy.
Oh, that sounds, let me see if I got it. Yeah, that doesn't sound crazy to me. It sounds like he's just using what he had. That's why all those vines are growing up around there. That's kind of like the guy that I knew that lives in Americus, Georgia, which is the lower part of Georgia that you're talking about. He had a peanut farm, and him and his brother built and flew their own airplanes. They built their airplanes themselves. And eventually they bought some nice airplanes. I mean, all that's paid off. They flew radio-controlled airplanes. So he's the one that fly. You hear people talking about the B-29 that's really huge. He was the one that flew that one all the time. His name was Mac Hodges. He's from that same place that you're talking about the same area. And they flew everywhere they went, but their peanut farms were so large. Driving from one place to another it would take way too much time. So they just flew around. Him and Billy, his brother, took care of all their irrigation and everything. They sprayed their crops. They did, you know, they used airplanes like we use cars.
I just, he took me around and showed me his operation. He had quite the operation. And he was, you know, we talked about the business side of it because, you know, with engines, you kind of married to them. You know, anything that's complicated like that, if you're just making one part, then that's, you know, it is what it is. But when you're responsible for making, you know, 800-900 parts in a typical engine, making all that work, and not only work, but stay together, okay, you're married to it for a little while. So we were talking, he was talking about his, you know, that marriage with, you know, aviation engines. And, oh my word, I could not believe the kind of stress that this guy deals with, you know, aviation engines and the insurance policy alone.
N4DJC.
I got you, Jerry. The insurance alone for this guy was, I don't know, it was like $1.5 million or something he had to carry. And he told me also, so he took me outside of the building, Dave, and he had some jugs out there, which is the cylinders that the piston rides in, air cools, goes through them. And the FAA had sent him those jugs under the name of, you know, different individuals, just to see if he rejected them or not. Just to test to see if he was trying to repair material that the FAA deemed unrepairable. And he said, you just got to deal with that all the time. And I just thought, my gosh, man, this guy was telling, I couldn't believe stuff he was telling me.
Go ahead, Jerry.
That helicopter you're talking about, Chad, I think it's either Hughes 305 or one of my high school classmates. We graduated 69 when he came back from Vietnam. He'd been a helicopter pilot, and he fitted one of those up. It was a crop duster for years, you know, in Georgia, northeast part of the state, where they didn't fly the Piper Pawnees. And Dave, the guy you're talking about, America, is that Mac? Is that the one you're talking about?
That's him, Mac Hodges, him and his brother Billy.
Yeah, I went to school down there. I lived down there four years. So I remember building planes. I didn't know they were an RC. That was probably a little after my time, I guess. Anyway, you guys carry on. I just thought I'd interject that. But yeah, that little helicopter, those things were, I mean, he towed that thing behind his pickup truck, and just, I mean, he'd fly just about anywhere. Yeah, they could get into a small field. Nowadays, my brother works on helicopters like that. They use in Japan to fertilize crops with, that sort of thing. You got to carry on. That's one to say, like, N4DKC clear.
Catch you later, Jerry. Yeah, Mac's a good friend. He put on competition events, and I'd go down there to his events, and then they would come up here when we put them on up here. So it was kind of, and we'd all go to North Carolina when they do them over there. So got to know everybody on the contest trail. And he had his own airfield, radio controlled airfield, and hobby shop. And a lot of people order stuff from him online a lot. Anyway. He sold the hobby shop, and I think he made a bunch of money selling off some of his peanut farms. So I don't think he's working. I think he's retired now. But he was really big into RC, one of the biggest in Southeast United States. But when you say married to it, Chad, I know exactly what I was thinking about it. Even with the profession that I was in, I with Bank of America. I had to get all the front-end systems, tellers, teller machines, online banking, telephone banking, all that to be able to talk to all the back-end machines, the databases in the different data centers and all of that stuff. And it's the same thing. You're building, but you're doing it in software instead of with the heads and the block and the crank and all of that stuff. You still got all those moving parts, but they're all virtual in software. So it's the same thing. And I was married to that for 15 years. That's all I ever did. Didn't even do any hobbies or anything else, just did that straight for 15 years. So, yeah, I see what you mean by being married to it.
KL4NUE, absolutely. And there's a fair amount of stress that comes with that. You know, I'm sure you understand that, especially, you know, doing virtual things with money. Oh, man, I can't imagine that, you know. But, no, I learned a lot from him, just from the business side of it, and really nice fellow. He was my age. He was ex-Marine. He worked on helicopters in the Marine Corps, and decided to open his own business. Just a very interesting shop. A lot of things in there was kind of stuff I have, but you know, he had one room in there that it has to stay a certain temperature. And, he deals with some of the valve seats and those light combings ceramic valve guides and valve seats and beryllium and, you know, that stuff has to be measured in a controlled environment, you know, to fit properly. And when you measure things down to a billionth of an inch, temperature matters. And I was just, you know, completely amazed with, you know, his whole setup. And I just couldn't imagine the kind of stress he was dealing with. But, you know, he seemed to be carrying it well.
Was he a younger guy or an older guy? Was, like, he near retirement?
No, we were the same age. I'm 50 now. And I think I bought that thing maybe 8 years ago. So he's 42, 43, somewhere around there. You know, typical veteran. I mean, we just, you know, we just kind of hit it off, you know, with all the bull crap, but, you know. But just, you know, just an amazing setup and just an amazing guy with all of that stuff. He you know, puts them all together himself. He says he can't trust anybody to do that kind of stuff. So he, you know, he does it himself. And, you know, just kind of amazing. But I tell you what, one thing I did see was, you know, any engine builder, you know, they've got their scrap pile out back where, you know, stuff comes in through the shop that you look at it and you go, how in the world did that get bent? Or how did that get broke? And, oh my gosh, that airplane stuff is violent. I mean, something goes wrong with that. It's horrible. I mean, everything comes to pieces.
I guess they are built to be light and strong, and I guess when something goes wrong, it really goes wrong. I don't know. I haven't seen that many broken airplane or helicopter engines, but I when I was doing the same thing, I had a shop at one point in time, and I'd rebuild engines and transmissions and even paint cars from time to time. But I had a friend in Traveler's Rest. His name was Jones. And he worked at Doc Green's auto parts store. It's a Napa auto parts store there. And down in the basement, all the way to the back, is where Jones worked. And he had all his machine shop tools up there. I'd take heads, blocks, pistons, or rods. And he'd rebuild. He'd do all the machine shop work that you're talking about. I'd do all the mechanic work. I'd tear it all down, clean it all up, take it all to him. He'd mic it all and, you know, line board if it needed it. He'd shave the top of the block if it needed that, you know, resurface the heads, press new guides in it if they needed guides. And then I'd take it all back to my shop and I'd assemble it all together and put it back in the vehicle and the guy'd go on his merry way. But we had a really good working relationship there for about 10 years. I took him everything I had, and he was really, really good at it. I think there's a lot of people that knew him. You ever heard of him, Jones, at Doc Green's and Traveler's Rest?
Kill 4 and Huey. I absolutely have. You know, with men like that with skill like that, they're not that many around anymore, you know. And when you find one, they don't always say a whole lot. That's one of them kind of guys, when he speaks, you better listen to what he's got to say, that kind of thing. But there used to be a lot of machine shops around here in the bottom of Napa stores, but there's just not too many of them around anymore that know, you know, how to do that kind of stuff. Everything's CNC today. And let me tell you this. So I put the engines on YouTube for customers for people who want to see them built. And let me let my radio drop. And that started with the fella who had old Packard engine. I was helping him with it, and he got put in the hospital about halfway through the build. And we were enjoying, you know, spending time together and doing that together. And he got put in hospital, so I said, well, I'll put it up on YouTube so he can see it while he's recovering. And my gosh, it just kind of went crazy from there. And So I got a follower, one of the followers, I don't know how many people's following those videos now, but one of the followers was from Germany. His name was Josef. And I get this text in German one day, and of course I can't read the thing, and or not a text, but an email, and I just deleted it, and every week or so I'd get another one. So me and Anna used the Google machine to translate, and he's wanting to come to the United States to become an apprentice with, to learn, to come to the shop for 2 weeks. Hang on. This is crazy. I'm not going to let somebody from Germany come out here. I don't know who this guy is, you know. So, he sent me an email for his son, who speaks English, and we translated through email for 8 or 10 months, and come to find out he works for the German TÜV, which is DOT in Germany, and he's, you know, trying to learn mechanical machine and stuff like that. So I agreed to come, and if you want to come and, you know, apprentice, but I'm not sure what I called it, but he did. He came. He came to stay for 2 weeks. He'd come back every year till COVID hit. But I don't speak a word of. It's amazing to me how I don't speak no English. But when you get two men that do the same thing for a living, it amazes me how you can muddle through. Well, not really muddle. I mean, you just, he would say it German, I'd say it English. And it was just, we had the best time, Dave. I mean, the best time. The whole 2 weeks, just, and we still keep in touch, you know. It's just, you know, this whole YouTube thing is crazy.
No, I can totally relate to that. I can. That's good. That's good camaraderie across the ocean. I've never had one that somebody over there that I couldn't talk to at all, but I had some that had some really thick accents. One guy that flew multirotors with, he was an engineer at BMW. He spoke a little English, but you had to really pay attention. And sometimes he'd use German words, and I could pick up on those German words on a lot of them. But we developed multirotors together back before they became really, really popular, before DJI existed. And that was fun. So, yeah, I can relate to exactly what you're talking about. Communication is tough, but you struggle through it, and it's rewarding in the end.
Yeah, KL4NUE. So at the end of every 2 weeks, we would have a, you know, cookout. You know, he'd cook a big German meal for me and Anna. And we'd do some kind of pit barbecue or something, you know, for him. And, we'd have to take him to a butcher shop. You can't. This Bilo and Walmart stuff with meat, he wasn't having it, you know. And he'd go to a butcher shop and, you know, have them cut it exactly the way. I mean, just picky. But boy, he's made the egg noodles, you know, from scratch, and just a wonderful experience. And like I said, we still keep in touch, and when we've been waiting on these Space A flights to open up with the Air Force again, and we're gonna hopefully go visit with him this summer.
Well, that'll be good. A ride over there isn't cheap without that. We've been talking about going back over there, but too expensive, right? The way the economy is right now. We're just sitting to wait out the economy until it comes back. But that's cool. That's good. And I hope you're able to make that happen. W4DJW.
We're good, WA. Quick question. Was that formula, that mathematical formula where you cross-multiplied I'm going back into the recesses of the brain. Did we used to call that interpolation or interpolating?
That's not interpolating, but what Chad's going to be doing with his voltage divider, where one scale only goes to one high, I guess the end, you use cross multiplication for a lot of things. And I guess you could call it that. But where he's going to have a voltage divider so that he doesn't exceed the capacity on one, yeah, you're taking the information that came from that result and you're applying it to another result. I guess you could refer to that as interpolating. But, it's a crude interpolation. But, yeah, you could do that.
I haven't used any of that mathematics in so many years. It's unreal. I crossed over into the business world from electronics school, calculating all my electronic equations over into business, and it was a completely different world.
Well, electronics is a lot more rewarding. Or mechanical or electronics, either one, to me, is a lot more rewarding than the business stuff. I never really got into the business stuff. Anyway, back to you, Chad, W4DJW.
Hey, Steve, how you doing, bud? So, Dave, I'm about 5 or 10 minutes from my destination. I'm going to wrap it up here in just a minute. But the last series I built, you know, some people, they don't want it on YouTube. Others do. But the last one I built was another guy from Germany. He shipped a World War II Jeep engine over here, Go Devil, out of a World War II engine Jeep. And she shipped it over here for me to build and wanted it, you know, put on YouTube so he could see. That's the last one I published. But after the engine was built, he sent the Jeep over here, wanting me, you know, put the thing in the Jeep. So I did. I put it in the Jeep, and it's an original a Willis, you know, still got the USA numbers on it and OD paint from, you know, Germany. But he got ready to send it back overseas, and getting it through customs and getting it on the ship, and oh my gosh, just the money. So he didn't want to do that, so we kept it here at the farm for a couple months, and he flew over here and drove it for a week or so, and just said, I won't sell it, you know, I'm not going to put that money in it to get it back to Germany. So Dad bought it from him, and we got it down here at the farm. But that's the last one I published up on YouTube. It's called the Go Devil series. And, you know, but at any rate, I've had a good experience with YouTube, and met some really good people, you know, in the process, too.
Well, I know how that taxes thing goes over there. We think taxes, import taxes, are bad with us. A lot of those countries in Europe, I think that's called the VAT, the VAT. VAT. So it oftentimes costs more taxes to bring something in than the thing is worth, much more. Sometimes, you know, a magnitude, order of magnitude more just to bring it in than the thing actually costs. So I can see how that, that'd break the bank if that was me. I wouldn't want to pay twice what it was worth in taxes just to get it, plus having it, you know, paid for fixing it just to get it over here. That wouldn't be worth it. So I get it. Anyway, I won't keep you. I know you're about to destinate. It was good talking to you. I enjoyed it. KO4, NUEW4DJW.
I enjoyed the ride home. I needed that. I'm tired. But, all right, well, I'm pulling in the driveway, 73s, and, 73 to you too, Mr. Steve. It's nice hearing from you in there, bud. Y'all be safe. KO4NUE, I think I got the net tonight. I'll see you then, maybe. I'm clear.
Before you go, what's next step on our simplex?
When you got the, you got the email, I'm assuming?
It's affirmative.
Map with it, right?
Affirmative.
We've kind of divided the area up into, you know, taking those areas have got the higher simplex numbers. So in other words, if you're in group two, you know, I would say that would end up being, you know, for example, your station would be a good station for, you know, an NCS or ANCS or whatever if, you know, if need be. But that'll be the next step is discussing, you know, how to move information in between those grids or those geographical areas if need be. But we're gonna make that a group discussion. Because, you know, some people may not be interested in that, but that's where we've gone with it, and we're just going to try to get some input from the members and see what they think before we go any further.
Okay, more good of you. Okay, yeah, I was just curious whether we were thinking about trying to do a message passing event or not.
Absolutely, KL4NUE. Here's what's been happening with that, is that when we did the initial test in February, most of the stations that got to see that, got to see their results, were, this is not good for my station, and I want to make changes to it to, you know, make it better. So when we get ready to do something, it's, well, you know, if you could just hang on another month, I'm making changes in my station and da-da-da. So that's where it's kind of, you know, which sometimes, though, you just got to say, hey, well, you know, we'll conduct this again in 90 days and go from there. But I tell you, Steve, one thing I am, you know, impressed with the whole Matrix thing is, you can really see the condition of your station, and that has really been pretty helpful for everybody that can see their name on the matrix. That's really been important for me to be able to see that.
Yep. Well, that's good. Well, I just wanted to ask you about that. I know you're trying to check out and get on in the house. I appreciate it, and I'll back on out and let you finish off there. KN4, VWA, have a good afternoon. 73, I'm clear.
Yep, we may try to do that up on Blue Ridge one day, see how many people's interested or something. But y'all be safe. KL4NUE, I'm clear.
VWA, KN4, VWA, you still out there, Dave?
I am, W4DJW.
Matrix. I believe you made out a lot better this last time on that Simplex 2, didn't you?
Yeah, I think there was something wrong with the filters in my TS-2000. It's like 15 years old. I think they probably are getting close to needing replacement.
Okay. Well, I thought that the other night was fun. And the message passing, you know, it can be fun. So, anyhow. I'm kind of looking forward to it if they do it again. Well, I am about to go into Chick-fil-A and get me a peach milkshake. So I'm going to bail out on you. You have a good afternoon. And 73, KN4, VWA. I'm clear.
All right. Enjoy and be careful out there. KN4 VWA, W4 DJW, clear.